So you have a controversial view on peanut butter. How do you make the perfect peanut butter sandwich?
Well, we were talking about that before, eh? So so long as there is a hell of a lot of butter with it, I think that's what makes it good, right? You know, and yeah, I was saying that, you know, it should be on that piece of bread or on that piece of toast like it's cheese, nice and thick. Perfect.
Do you have any other views on food? Like, what, if you could only eat one meal for the rest of your day? I know it's a cheesy question. Or if you actually, you're on a desert island, even more cheesy, and you can only have three meals, and you can take a couple items, and the meals just keep turning up every morning like magic. What three meals are you picking, and then what couple things are you taking?
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. You know, I was actually asked this question or a similar question this morning.
Oh, well, not very original.
It was for part of a presentation, part of the introduction there. So, Campbell, what's your favourite food? And the answer I gave people was to say that the best food or that my favourite food is the kind of food that you've caught or killed or grown yourself, right? Mm. And then you cook it and serve it up for people. That food, I reckon, has special qualities that stuff from the supermarket doesn't, because it's you've caught it.
Yeah, dopamine's all in there.
You've butchered it. Yeah, yeah, it's got mana that normal food doesn't have.
The mana, yeah.
No, seriously, I reckon it does. You know, okay. Like when was the, I don't know if this has happened to you, but has anyone come up to you and said, mate, I've been hunting, here's some venison backstraps or something like that. Has anyone done that for you?
No. I don't have friends.
When that happens, because it'll happen one day.
Yeah.
It's
another level.
Like, yeah, it's another level. I mean, it's just venison at the end of the day. It is the same stuff that you could have got from. Well, no, it isn't the same stuff you could have got from the shop, actually, because it's wild. But when it's had someone's effort go into catching it and then preparing it, it transforms it into something else.
That's interesting.
It's food plus.
Food plus.
Yeah.
Food squared.
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever caught your own in some capacity?
I'm a pretty keen fisherman, so yeah. I do lots of that. Not so much the hunting. I mean, I've shot a few rabbits and stuff, and they're fine to eat, I suppose.
Not great. Yeah. Pull out the pellets.
Yeah, oh, they're all right. Yeah. No, it's just a single bullet rather than a shotgun. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, yeah, it's just you go. Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Duck's the same. I don't like duck for that reason.
Interesting.
Yeah, but no, I think if you're on a desert island, you probably have the need to go and catch it and cook it and kill it yourself, actually.
So you would turn down the meals made for you just for the opportunity. Have you seen that new show? It's like In the Wild or something. It's all these people thrown into the wild and they have to like survive and they all just have a meltdown.
I haven't actually. I've heard about the meltdowns and whatnot, but I'm just like, no, that's bullshit. I don't watch that shit on TV.
Good man.
What
shit do you watch then? What brings joy to your life? Is it YouTube?
It's YouTube. Yeah, YouTuber. Yeah. I'm not a TikTok guy. I haven't signed up for TikTok. Yeah.
You got to be on TikTok.
Okay, well, cool. I won't see myself.
Yeah, you won't watch it. Yeah, yeah.
It might go viral as, but I'll never
know. I'll never know.
I'll never fucking know. Yeah, as I say, I'm into the fishing, man. So it's YouTube is all about that. That's what I watch. Yeah.
Is there any art to fishing, or is it just like?
Oh, come on. Oh well, you know, I reckon most people when you say, "Oh, I'm into fishing," they think you mean throwing a bit of bait over the side of a boat and waiting for a snapper to jump on it, right? So I enjoy that. That's fine. But this weekend, for example, I went down to Taumarunui with some mates, and we were after trout, you know, and, trying to catch trout is all about, it's hunting. It's not fishing. It's trying to find your target, plop a fly in front of it and hope you're good enough to hook it, play it, land it, and then probably put it back and try and catch another one.
Are you allowed to crossbow it? Because that seems more...
I don't know about the answer to that. I think you're probably not allowed to crossbow it. I don't know.
Have you ever bear it? Done a bear to it? No, I don't know how to say that.
A bear to it? What's that?
Like where the, you know, bears just fucking grab it?
No, I'm not quick enough for that.
Right. So you use like a fly and then what? Do you use a trawler thing that attracts it? What's the best way to catch a trout?
Yeah, with a little fly. Shit, you should have told me you can ask this question. I could have brought a whole lot of them in. They look like little insects, the things that are actually in the river that they're eating. Huh. Yeah, so you make an imitation of that with, you know, fur and feathers and fluff.
Do you make the noise?
Wind it around a hook. What's that? What's the noise is that?
Like, how do you, what has been your process to be one with the fly? You know, like how do you start replicating the insect? What have you learned? What's been your development as a fisherman?
Oh, I don't think you're sort of replicating the insect, as it were, because the insect itself, just to get a bit technical here, they actually live in the water. They're not coming from, well, they are actually, some of them are, but they're generally in the water. They live on the rock, and the rocks in the stream bed, and during their life cycle, they essentially come back up through the water, turn into a bug with wings, fly off, find another similar bug. They mate, and then, you know, they lay their eggs in the water and the life cycle continues. That's sort of what it is.
I hope it's a similar bug. That would be a bit weird.
Well, yeah. Cockroach. It's just genetic diversity, I suppose.
Genetic diversity. Okay, so it comes out. I haven't talked about fishing yet. I mean, I used to do it. My first time I ever caught a fish, it was petrifying. So I got it. It was exciting. And then, or maybe the first time on my own without mum's helping me take the hook off. So I went to try to take the hook off, but it fell in the crack of the wharf.
Right.
And I couldn't get it, and it was drowning or dying or whatever you want to call it. Is it called drowning if it's in the oxygen?
Yeah, it probably is.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Should we unpack that?
It's just the opposite. That's just the opposite of what you and I do, you know? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How stupid. Like, how stupid are dolphins, though, like on a side tangent? Because they can't even breathe under there, and they're just chilling.
Yeah, I don't know. No opinion on a dolphin.
Nah, I'm not a fan of them. Everyone thinks they're not like sharks. I'm like, have you seen it in the water?
From a fisherman's perspective, they're pretty useful because out in the sea, because they tend to herd up the bait that the fish you're wanting to catch are eating, because the dolphins want to eat that stuff too. So they herd it all up and everything congregates in one place, and it makes it for pretty easy fishing if you can find that. That's like a gift from God, really.
Do you look for like if you didn't have that fancy radar shit and you just were going to use the animals and science, what would you look for?
100%. Yeah, so you're looking for dolphins, you're looking for birds, you know, gannets hitting the water. Man, gannets. I'm surprised you haven't seen this again on YouTube, or I don't know, you're watching Matt Watson or something like that. Gannets literally raining from the sky, smashing into the water, getting these little fish.
Mm.
You know, because they want to eat them. The dolphins want to eat them too. And there's, you know, a whole lot of Aucklanders floating around in their boats catching snapper underneath.
And gannets sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, they get pretty close. Yeah, totally accidentally. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a problem.
Does it feel the same? Did it have mana?
I wouldn't want to eat a gannet because I reckon they just taste like that bait that's balling up in front of you. Or, you know, they taste like sardines, I reckon.
Yeah, they look like they taste shit, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've heard like when they start to go blind from the impact of the water over time, they'll get sad, and then they can't fish anymore. Yeah. So then the mates fly them into a cliff.
Really?
I don't know. But like, I need Jamie to pull it up or something, like Joe Rogan says. Someone to like Google it.
Totally.
I'll find out.
We should Google it now. Far out.
Gannets kill themselves.
Gannets kill themselves. I haven't heard that before. That sounds, strange.
Gannets kill each other when blind. So, okay, what other?
I've never heard of a gannet going blind, either.
Fuck, how do you even spell gannet? Gannet.
Two N's.
Oh, yeah. There you go. This is top tier content. Deep study of the gannet collision zone. When two gannets target the same fish and one pieces the neck of. Nope. Reveals daredevil dodging gannets. I feel like I might have just lied. We'll reconvene.
I don't know if you've lied. I think you've definitely been told a porky, though.
Oh, here we go. On the fishing website. The impact of repeatedly hitting the surface at speed takes a toll. Old gannets eventually go blind, unable to hunt. They die. So I don't know if they get flown into the thing.
Kamikaze style.
Fun fact, young gannets kill off the older blind birds by luring them into diving onto rocks. Okay, so it's not a supportive thing.
Yeah, who's observed this? You know, it's just a bit of scientific research behind it. It's on Reddit. Okay, well, that's just about as scientific as the internet gets.
It makes sense, though. You know what I mean? So they go blind, they can't hunt anymore, and you're competing with them to get more fish. I thought it was like, oh, we care about the old fella.
Nah.
he's competition.
He's competition. Well, he wouldn't be competition, though, would he?
Well, because he's diving into rocks, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to take himself out of the game.
Starve.
Nah, but, well, they're just birds. I don't think birds think like that.
Interesting.
You know? They don't.
You don't think they have feelings?
No.
Have you seen that penguin walk off into the distance? Have you seen that clip? So it's quite famous now. So he has a fight with the other penguins and just fucks off. He just walks off to the mountain. There's nothing there.
And this isn't an animated thing. This is an actual penguin.
Yeah, it's another confirmed fact from Ryan. Like, this is potentially true, what I said. They do go blind. It's whether they're killed in kindness or killed out of savage competition.
If I was a Gannet, I wouldn't bother with that. If I was a young Gannet with an old Gannet next to me, going, hey, man, you're blind. I'm going to help you fly into a cliff and just help you top yourself. So I don't think I'd bother. Yeah. I'd just let him starve.
You wouldn't even feed him?
Well, at least they can't feed himself. And, Jeez. You know, you're in the way. You might as well just stay to the side, buddy. Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on the aging demographic in New Zealand?
Well, see, that's different because there's this the feelings, yeah, the sentient nature.
Are you a sentient being in a Gannet's body, or are you just channeling the Gannet and you just don't know?
I'm just commenting on the Gannet. Yeah, okay, I think that's okay. All. Yeah, I'm not channeling a Gannet or anything like that. I think I'm sentient. I think we all are. You and I at least are, I think.
Yeah. What does sentient mean to you? Like, what's consciousness?
Oh, God, this is heavy, man. Fucking hell.
This is easy chats, bro. What are you talking about?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, do God. You think, what is your thoughts on like the deeper recesses of the human mind? Like, what do you think there's something more than what we are? Do you think consciousness is just human, or is there something deeper to it?
Oh, man, that is such a heavy question. Far out.
And you can be wrong.
Oh, I will totally be wrong. I'm wrong 90% of the day, every day. God, I want to give this one serious thought.
Yeah, take your time.
I guess maybe a place to start is to say or to ask, is there life after death? That's kind of where that one might go. And I would think the answer to that is probably yes, but it's not life as we know it. It's probably not like it is here. I have no idea what it would be like. I think it's just... You know, the idea of people having multiple lives, you know, you come back as a cat or you come back as a ant or something like that, or a tree or maybe another human being. I reckon that's right. I reckon that's right. You're
reincarnated.
Your energy comes like who came up with the laws of energy? Is it Newton?
Newton, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So energy's only ever transformed. It's not made or
yeah.
Or it never disappears, it just changes its form.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
So I reckon that's a scientific explanation for
reincarnation.
For the reincarnation. Yeah.
That's valid. Like, I mean that's a, you know, it sounds fruity. You're like, I'm gonna turn up as a cat. But the fact that, yeah, no, energy is never, you know, created or yeah, it's just replicated.
It just changes its form. Right. Everyone goes, oh, well, okay. Well, if I put heat under a bit of ice, it turns into water. That's changed its form, right? That's maybe evidence of that. But I think, I think the reincarnation thing is a faith-based way of describing what Newton was talking about in terms of energy transfer.
Hmm.
How about that?
Do you think there's consequences for immoral behavior in a life now and that impacts the next life? Or...
Probably.
Okay. What were you like in your past life, do you think? did you do good? What?
I think I did good because I'm doing good now.
Yeah, so right? You got rewarded.
I reckon. Yeah. Yeah, if you're a bastard in a previous life, you'll probably suffer that consequence going forward. You know, that's the idea of karma as well, right? You know, it's the same sort of thing, except maybe karma is what happens in life rather than death. I don't know.
Where did you develop this belief? Like, was it religious or was it imprinted on you? Is it something you found and gravitated towards, or what's been?
No idea.
Just first time asked that question. What is consciousness?
Yeah, well, it's a massive question. You don't realize how massive that question potentially is, and there'll be a whole lot of people here going, "Ooh, that's a bit of a mindfuck sort of a question." Though I don't know where I've developed that. I had a religious upbringing through school.
That doesn't
mean I'm religious as such, but a pastoral sort of angle to my formative years.
Hmm.
Yeah.
They seem more disciplined than usual, in my opinion.
That's right. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I think you need that discipline there because you're trying to coordinate 300,000, whatever it is, children to be in a certain place at a certain time and to just get get the machine rolling. Discipline's the thing that, well, one of the things that holds it together.
Mm. Mm. What was school like for you?
It's good. Yeah, I enjoyed school. It was great. I went to Dilworth School over here in Epsom. And yeah, that was fantastic.
Okay.
Yep. I wouldn't change it.
Were you a nerd or a jock or a, like if you used American stereotypes?
I don't know. Probably a jock, a quiet one.
Oh, yeah, quiet jock. What was your sport?
Well, you played everything, really. I played rugby a bit. Hated the coach in the end, and so swapped out to hockey, which was awesome.
Jesus, penalty corners, that's courage.
Yeah, yeah, well, I was the goalie. So.
Oh, yeah, pads though. Which one's scarier? Would you rather be the person running out or the goalie getting copping it every day?
I'd rather be the goalie, I think. Yeah, because it's just you and the ball.
Does it hurt?
No. Well, it depends where it hits you, I suppose, but generally no, because you've got the pads on.
Yeah.
But the ball's still coming at you at a million miles an hour, so there's that.
How do you stop flinching?
My trick used to be if the ball was coming towards me, I would step out of its way and hit it back, like in baseball. Yeah, not popular because your players are not expecting it. They're expecting you to take it on the body and it drop to the ground and you kick it away or hit it away when it's on the ground. But if you step to the side and you smack it back at them just as they smacked it at you, they just don't like it. So
intimidation.
Well, it's just giving it back, you know.
Yeah.
They think, oh, that guy's got pads on. We're going to smoke it at him.
Yeah, so you smoke it straight
Forget
at
it,
him.
Buddy. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, someone's about to hit it and they haven't quite hit it and you're standing right in front of them. So if you dive at them head first, that just throws them completely.
Mind games. I like it.
Yeah.
Because I was watching a guy, probably the best guy I've ever heard on leadership, is Jocko Willink. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yeah.
It's just like an ex-Navy SEAL. And he was talking about the difference between going on patrol and going to attack. You know, so patrols, essentially, you could get attacked. You could have IEDs or whatever they're called, the bombs in the road. And then it's a different posture. One's a defensive posture of like, oh, they could come from anywhere, as opposed to an aggressive posture.
Yep.
And the fear is completely different. So something in the last week I've been experimenting with leaning into the fear instead of cowering from it and avoiding it, and it's not as scary.
Yeah.
So it's a similar analogy where you talk, hit it back.
Yeah, hit it back.
Do you apply that in other aspects of your life, like where, you know, you've been confronted with either adversity or fear or someone's confrontational?
I suppose I've learned to swallow the frog. You know, you've heard that saying before. You know, you've got a job that or a task that you might need to do at work that you're just dreading doing, that should actually be right at the top of your list and you should just do it first. Mm. It's a feel the fear, do it anyway, that saying, right? So I guess that's kind of the same, you know. It's not attacking it in the same way as, you know, what I was saying about being the goalie in hockey, but it is getting on and doing that real shitty bit of the job first, get it out of the way. Get it out of your mind, and you stop worrying about it, and you can move on to the other stuff, which is 10 times easier because it doesn't have that problem associated with it, you know. And usually it's, in my line of work anyway, usually it's, oh, God, how's this guy going to react to this bad bit of news or this thing I need to tell them? And actually, when you go ahead and swallow the frog, you find that they are the person you're telling, you know, this bad news to is usually, they usually take it like a champ.
Yeah, it goes well, eh?
Yeah, normally.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. I think there's a way of doing that, though. There's a way of front-footing it. You know, you don't sort of pussyfoot around with it. You just say, hey, look, I'm ringing because I've got some bad news, right? Are you sitting down? Good. Okay. So here's whatever it is.
Yeah, you frame it.
Ah, I thought that might happen. Okay, well, that's all right. Thanks for letting me know. What do we do about it? That's usually how it goes.
What would be, in terms of framing bad news, because you know, you experience a lot of the bad news in your line of work. So, how do you frame news and how do you prepare yourself? So you got to have this conversation. What do you do? And then once you've decided how you're going to frame it, what do you do in terms of presenting it? Do you have a system?
Well, the system is pretty much like what I just said to you before. It's totally front-footing it and just laying it bare. You've just got to be completely honest about it. But there's a whole lot of prep that goes on, at least I do, a whole lot of prep before I get to that point of picking up the phone and delivering whatever news it is. And so it's really about making sure the ground I'm standing on is really, really solid, right? So if someone, the recipient of the bad news says, oh, what about, I've thought about that, or what about that? Or if I do that and that, does that change things? So I've tried to sit down and figure out what the different permutations are in terms of what the person's response could be. So that way I can go, no, thought of that, it's just bad news. And this is your only option. Yeah. Hmm. So we know that the ground, well, I know the ground I'm standing on is solid as.
Hmm.
That's really the prep that's required. That's one thing that can often happen is you do all that work and you go, right, okay, pick up the phone. And you get their fucking voicemail after all that work, you know, and psyching yourself up for it. It's a lot. And you don't know when they're going to ring you back because you won't necessarily be in that prepared state anymore.
Yeah.
Because you've moved on to something else and three hours later they ring you back, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's why it's important to do the groundwork because at least it's sitting there in the back of your head.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's almost like exposure therapy where that's what they do to combat fear. So if you're afraid of needles, incrementally expose yourself to the needle, but make a voluntary choice. So you're exploring all the avenues and using that base as the confidence to communicate.
Mm.
And it also feels good for them because they feel understood because you've thought of all the things that they've done.
Totally.
It's interesting.
Yeah. We've got to do that because otherwise people will make a silly move, you know. When you're buying property – and with borrowed money particularly, it's like I'm taking someone up in a plane for a skydive. And if they don't know what all the consequences are, there's a really good chance they'll open the door and just leap out because they get all wound up in the, hey, I want the house. Kind of, you know, buying a house is an emotional thing. It's not really a money thing. So they get wound up in that and there's a tendency for some people, to literally leap out of the plane. So my job is to make sure the plane is low to the ground, like maybe it's just a step for them. So if they do leap out, it's not far to fall.
Hmm.
And they've got a parachute on, you know, maybe a line attached to them as well before they leap. And that's just, you know, conditional approval, make sure they know what they're doing.
Hmm.
Got all their ducks in a row. That's all that is.
That's a good analogy.
But that is totally how it is. I think a lot of mortgage advisors have a real left brain approach to it. You know, it's process driven, it's logical. I don't think in that way. I try and make sense of the mess, if you like. Try and find order in all of the different bits that are laid out in front of you. There's a game that my wife plays actually in the mornings. It's this association game. So she does Wordle. And then there's another one, I think it's got maybe 16... Yeah, it must be 16 little tiles and they've all got a word on them and you've got to put them into groups of four, all different sorts of categories. I'm reasonably good at that game because I can see the associations, and so that's what I'm doing when I'm trying to organise a mortgage for someone. It's about seeing all the mess, if you like, and making sense of it so that essentially people have got a parachute on and the plane's really low when they jump out and do it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense. And I'm wondering as well, people don't actually know what you're doing and you're talking about what you do. So maybe just it makes sense.
Okay.
What do you do, brother?
Yeah.
That's on me, not you, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's right. So, no, I organise money for people so they can buy houses. You know, mortgage broker, that's the label. Hmm. Yeah.
What's it like? So you become a mortgage broker. Where does the business fall from? You know what I mean? Like, where does it come from? What do you do? How do you get it?
I don't know anymore.
Do you have inputs and outputs that you do every day? Like I do 40 calls. It's just my thing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Far out. No, good on you. I think it's just the accumulation of momentum over time. That's really all it is. My business comes from word of mouth, essentially. Just, I guess, doing a decent job and people liking what I do and feeling like they've had their hand held, you know, through the process, I suppose. One thing I did a long time ago, this would be, God, just coming out of the GFC so what's that, 10 plus years ago, there were no mortgages to be written because no one could get any money, and everyone was so shit scared that they didn't want to borrow it even if they could, right? So I had no business at all. So apart from going fishing a couple of days a week, I sat down and wrote a book. Which is all about how to get a mortgage if you're a first home buyer, right? Because my idea was, well, maybe I'll put this book together, put it out into the marketplace, and people definitely find it useful. There's no question about that. But some people might actually go, I wonder if he can help me, and then I'll write a mortgage off the back of that. And that actually did work. So then I came across this PR lady, and she said, Campbell, I think rather than putting Google ad money behind the book to promote it, maybe you should divert your budget and give it to me and I'll do some PR work for you, right? And that turned out to be a really wise move on my part, because it got me and my face on radio and newspaper. She said to me, the Holy Grail would be getting you on Breakfast TV. And I was like, okay, that sounds all right. So, yeah, that actually happened first, then the newspaper and radio stuff came after that. Actually, it's normally the other way around. You know, TV's sort of the pinnacle. And it didn't make the phone ring at all. None of that makes the phone ring. People think, if your face is on TV, the phone will ring and you'll make bloody tons of money. But it doesn't actually happen. But a real cool thing that came from that, and this is the best bit of it really, is that I got to write a regular blog for TVNZ's website, just about mortgages and money and whatever. And I did that for, it was a fortnightly piece to be written, and I did that for about 18 months. And it was the consistency. Mm. It's not the, hey, here I am on TV. It's the consistency of that that writing for a credible source, or at least a source that has credibility. Yeah, that's probably the way to put it.
There's some aspects of credibility. You don't want to lose the opportunity to write again.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just quietly. That gets you noticed. And then other journalists ring you up and they ask you, hey, what do you think about whatever it is? And people notice it. And so that just created a body of evidence, if you like. And you can see it now. It's been the longest burn of any kind of marketing initiative I've ever done, right? Like if you type in my name to Google and hit the news tab, there's just screeds of shit that comes up. I'll do it right now. Let's see.
You'll be on airplane mode, mate.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I am on airplane mode. Well, you do it.
So we're doing some live Googling. This is pioneering right now. Here we go.
Campbell Hasty News.
News.
And you hit the news tab.
Oh, up to 25% in mortgage prison as rates falling. You're in the Hasty Mortgage Director. That's recent, 15th of the 6th, 2023. Will appealing the triple CFA be enough? Yeah, fuck, eh?
Yeah.
All page one.
There's a whole lot of shit there. So that just builds a weight of credibility and authority, I suppose. And when someone says, you should talk to Campbell about your mortgage, you know they're going to Google you. Just to see if you're legit or a dick or whatever. And they go, okay, well, maybe I will ring him.
The other thing
that works.
The other way I look at it is like I see a referral as an elevation of status, which, maybe you shouldn't look at it like that. But if someone asks me for a referral, I start freaking out. I'm like, shit, my perception in the other person's eyes could go up or down.
Yeah.
And I want it to go up. But the good thing about content and the good thing about the news thing is that's a low-level referral. Hey, saw this article. What do you think? And then that feeds into it. What do you think? Do you ever think of how to make referrals easier or how to provide a level of service that compels them to want to refer? Like, how, given that it's such an important part of your business, do you put any time into thinking about it?
No more than just doing what we think is a good job.
So then what's a good job then?
Well, it's people who are absolutely bloody stoked with the outcome and they understand why they've got the mortgage they have. And then that connects to the thing that they really wanted, because no one wants a fucking mortgage. Everyone wants the thing it gets, which is the house, right? So if you can connect that that good process and the logic with the emotional thing that they wanted, which is the house and the roof over their head and a place to raise their family and kids and whatnot, then that equals a super satisfied customer in my mind.
I've been thinking about a lot of what value is, because I've never had the opportunity. Usually people tell me what to sell and I just, okay, just give me a phone. But now I can create the offer, I can create the experience. And then now I'm confronted that I'm selling me now. So then that has been a whole shit show for a year. But piece that puzzle recently. But I've been thinking about what is value, you know. It's like you had this dream outcome of the house. How do we get there as quick as possible with the least amount of effort and believe the person that's going to help us get there can? And that's the referral, word of mouth sort of stuff. So are there stages or things you've recognized in the process that you need to get immediately? For example, with me, I know that I need to, in the first onboarding day, I need to get all the infrastructure set up, like all access to the accounts, everything put in an appropriate order, and have an expectation of delivering the videos the next day, because that's when they get that reward. Mm. And then the next stage is getting them a client as quick as possible so they believe. Do you ever think about how you structure an onboarding or how you gather information or what works for you?
Yeah, we do. Every mortgage broker is going to be gathering information and lots of it. It's almost to a point where the information we want is invasive. You know, we are literally opening up someone's wallet and looking in it. And I used to do life insurance as well. So you'd open up the medical file and look in it. So you're doing both those things at the same time. And if you realize that that's what you're asking a customer to do, then you've got to understand that they won't do any of that stuff for you unless they trust you already. So really the thing that is required before you try and create value is you've got to have that trust. And not that being in the paper or whatever means you're necessarily a trustworthy person, but it just adds weight to all of that, right? And then it's just how you deal with people. You know, you've got to be totally upfront with them. You've almost got to smack them with it, you know. But here's an example, right? So we always do quite a bit of analysis for a person prior to doing any kind of mortgage application. And that analysis can be, well, I've had one client not so long ago describe it as me kicking him in the balls.
Oh, that's good. It was all part of the service.
Yeah, that's all part of the service. Yeah, I try to smile when I'm doing it.
Some people like it.
Well, it gave him the reality check that he needed. And so they were able to adjust their behavior, I suppose, to make the getting of the mortgage more likely. Yeah. And that was back in March, I suppose, of this year. And here we are now in November, and they settled on their first house this week sometime. So that kicked off a transformation for them, and in that transformation, it was where this value was created and delivered, right? And just holding their hand through the process and being the knowledgeable person, they would ask me millions of questions. I said, no, don't do that. Do this, and after that, that's your next step, you know. And that's created the value. The big problem people encounter, and they don't know they're going to encounter this, but the big problem they encounter when they go and try and do a mortgage application via the bank, so they get none of that. They'll get an approval, go use it. That's it, right? So that person, usually at the bank, as I say, hasn't made the connection between the money and the house. And right in between there, that's the value that a mortgage broker, or this mortgage broker anyway, adds. It's to connect those two, you know? And like I said before, a mortgage is something no one wants. No. Just like insurance. No one wants that shit, either.
Right? Yeah, and then I just, because I've called, I don't know, 200 people just with the insurance leads that come in. Oh, they're not leads, they're humans. But I keep talking to them about, oh, I got heart failure. Oh, my dad's dying. Can you help him? No. And then you're coming across this person. Oh, you're just trying to convince me to do it. I'm like, dude, like if you were hearing the fucking yarns. Like I was talking to a guy, heart failure, wife is in her 40s, got cancer. They've had their partner's mother come over from another country in an emergency visa because they've got a 7 7-year-old and a 9-year-old, and they can't afford to look after them, and they don't know if she can stay because of her visa.
Yep.
So it's like, and insurance is, you know, it's like, best case scenario, you buy it, you don't use it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope this is a complete waste of money. Let's hope it is. Yeah, we've started to ask that question of our customers too. Yeah, we make phone calls to our customers just to ring them and say, hi, how are you doing? Anything, you know, do you need us or whatever? Nah, sweet as. Okay, see you later. We make those kind of phone calls all the time. But now we've started to say, look, and this is true, we've had a couple of different clients. Both have had some bad shit happen to them. One has had a good outcome in terms of, you know, good financial outcome. The other hasn't. And the difference has just been insurance, right? One's had an ear problem, can't work because he's just lost his balance. You know, he's fucked. The other one had the Michael Schumacher skiing accident, hit a rock, coma, right? And yeah, one's on the brink of losing his house, the other's not. It's as simple as that, right? So we tell that story to customers and ask them if they want a review of that stuff, and ball's in their court, you know. If they don't, it's fine.
Do you still do insurance for them, or you pass it on to someone else?
We pass it on to someone else. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, what made you leave? Like, what made you not do it and become a debt peddler?
Because you can't do those two different things well at volume.
Interesting.
You can't. You can't. People who do both, and they're just one or two man bands, that you can do a really good job, but you're only going to do, you know, one or two clients every month or something.
So is the acquisition that's the challenge, because you're not known for one thing, or
No, I think it's the level of effort required to get a good mortgage in place is the same amount of level of effort required to get a good insurance package in place, and there's just so much to know on each side that you can only know all that stuff and implement a good solution if you're not doing much of it.
Yeah, I'm learning that recently. So for the last year, I've tried all these different... Basically, I started a business to learn a skill instead of sell the skill I already had.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
And also, I don't like ripping people off, so I tell them, hey, I have no idea what I'm doing, want to take a punt? And I'm like, nah, this isn't good for you. Let's try something else.
Well, see, that's good.
Yeah.
But the transparency is good.
Yeah.
No, it is.
Well, it's been... It wasn't until recently that it started working and making sense. And what that was... By accident, found a client and then had other booked meetings with different industries. And then I was like, there's so much intellectual investment to try and create an offer for them and think of a system and process and then nurture them through how it works, as opposed to a single thing that I just obsess over and get really good at it.
Mm.
And then that's what I'm learning from smarter people than me, is like, success is the quality of the no's you give. So now there's people saying, hey, can you help me? I'm like, no. Like,
yeah, that's not what we do.
Yeah.
I learned that myself, had that same lesson, because when we started out in mortgage broking, I said, we do mortgages for everyone, everything, right? It was like going to the warehouse of mortgages. So, you know, renovations and buying your second house, your first house, your third house, a rental property, a batch, all sorts of the commercial property, business loans. We do the whole lot. And the problem with that is that, and this marketing guy, he described it to me, I thought it was pretty cool. He said, that's like literally being dropped into the warehouse, like, you know, the warehouse, literally dropped into the aisles there. You know you're looking for something, but you don't, and you know you're in the right place, but you don't know exactly what aisle you need to be in, right? So I said, what we've got to do is we've got to change all that, and you've just got to be one thing, maybe two things, but probably just one thing. He said, so of all that shit you do, pick one, right? And I said, okay, well, I like first home buyers because they tend to come to the table without any bad habits.
Yeah.
And they're hungry for knowledge.
Yeah.
And they tend to be of a set where they can drive a computer, right? So in terms of giving me information, it comes. So I said, all right, well, let's just focus on that. And, you know, the funny thing that happened is that when I stood and put that little, you know, flagpole in the ground, and I stood in the market and said that, all of those other people that I was trying to attract, they arrived as well. They went, oh, here's a guy that knows what he's talking about. Maybe he can help me with this other thing. I was like, fuck, I've been standing here asking for you guys to come and darken my doorstep for bloody years. And all of a sudden, when I say the one thing I do is not what you want, here you are.
It's funny that, eh?
Yeah.
It's like when you get married, you know.
That, I don't think that's happened for me. But, yeah, so it's funny. The specialisation resulted in all these other people that I didn't want to serve anymore coming and knocking on my door. Strange, really strange.
Well, I think they say good copy is showing the person they're understood.
I suppose so.
So if you think about marketing is the efficiency of which you attract your ideal client and get rid of people that aren't. So an example would be there's a company, Gym Launch. They found out that there's 20% of their customers that paid more than anyone else and stayed longer. And they were conservative. So they found out their interest, their structure, the type of business, and it was like something like health professional gyms. Not just gyms, but within the gym. So then what they did in their marketing was start and wear hats that said, make gyms great again, a red hat, which would screen out every person that's not conservative and magnetize the type of people that they wanted.
Yep.
And that's what becomes quite interesting when it's really clear on the offering. Same thing with fishing. You put a bigger hook to avoid the mackerel or whatever. Yeah. Relating.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Well done.
Thanks, man. I'll try my best. So have you been other lessons as you've gone through business, like specializing, that makes sense?
Yeah.
Training and developing or creating process? What's been your strength in a business sense, do you think?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think I'm failing every fucking day, to be honest.
So self-awareness is good? This-
Yeah, well, I suppose that's what it is.
Humility?
Yeah, no, every week I look back and I go, fuck, I didn't do that. I should have done that. That could have gone a whole lot better. Someone asked me something along those lines this morning at a meeting I was at just at.
Fuck, who's this person? It's like my identical twin. Yeah.
Oh shit, the thought's gone out of my bloody head now.
So you're talking to this guy this morning and he reminds you so much of me because he asked the exact same questions.
Yeah, that's right. So I said to him, I've spent the last almost 20 years behaving like I'm a volunteer, right? So there's no expectation that I'll get paid. I'm doing this for free. In fact, you know, in my world, the customer doesn't pay me anyway. It's the bank who pays me. So I am kind of a volunteer in that sense. And that way there's no expectation. There's no hooks. There's no catches. It's like, well, this is what I think the solution is for you. Take it or leave it. Up to you. And oftentimes, well, not often, but sometimes people have gone, yeah, you know what? I'm going to take it and leave it. Thanks very much. And they go somewhere else and they get exactly the same answer. They go, oh, shit, he was right. And often they'll come back, right? So it's like, what is it? Set it free and it'll come back or whatever. It's that.
It's crazy.
It's that. Yeah, so I think that's a little secret to success, just do it without expectation of reward, really. Make sure it's good. Like, you know, don't talk shit all day. But it's what you're talking about's got to be good. Or delivering's got to be good. But do it without any expectation of reward. And that way you'll have no problem getting paid and rewarded because it does come back. That's the karma thing.
Yeah, I agree. It does need to be focused. I'd add into that. Like if you're just spraying everywhere and being helpful.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because a lot of that, if you're spraying it everywhere and trying to be helpful, actually some of it's probably not that helpful.
Yeah.
It's just noise. Yeah, well, exactly. It's just unhelpful shite, you know. So, yeah, you've got to be half decent in terms of, you know, your expertise in that. But, yeah, I think that's definitely a key, you know. Pretend you're a volunteer. I remember thinking this exactly this exact same thought when I was thinking about going into someone's house, having sorted out the mortgage and about to talk to them about insurance, right? Because love them or hate them, insurance guys do have a reputation of being, I don't know.
Greasy salesman. Commission breath.
Yeah, commission breath.
Yeah.
So you don't want to walk into someone's house with commission breath. You don't.
I brush your teeth with freedom of outcome.
You don't. Yeah, that's right. You don't want to go in there smelling like you're desperate for that sale because there's nothing surer than that will kill your it'll kill your sale right there. Even if the person really wants what you're about to talk to them about, it'll kill it off. So you've always got to behave I forget the Greek term, the Latin term for it. Something to do with fidelity, you know.
Words aren't my strong.
But yeah, just be true and honest and straight. You know, basically, it's what it amounts to.
Ten.
Yeah.
So I used to do commissionally sales and was real awkward and stand like this and didn't know how to communicate and the framework on how to communicate. So I started like becoming a character and then I let go of that character. But one of the things you learn is actions you need to take to get the response you want from others. And one of the things you're talking about there is indifference. So if someone is needy, like is arguably one of the least attractive things ever. Like, please, please buy the house. Yeah. And it comes through all your tonality and everything and the commission breath. But with indifference is, we would even tell people when we're training sales teams was to lean back on the close, conveys indifference. And because what that conveys is, I've got all these people that are interested in this. You're in control, so there's no pressure. But also it adds value to what I have because I don't need you to say yes.
Yeah.
Which is partly the underpinning thing of what you're doing, not consciously.
Yeah, yeah. Even if there aren't hordes of people who want what you've got. Yeah,
even if in years since someone showed up.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't sold anything for 3 months.
How do you not lose hope, though? Like people beating at a wall right now, what's your advice? And it doesn't seem like anything's happening.
I would just say carry on and carry on with your process. Just let the process take care of things. We had a patch at the start of this year where customers were coming in the door and we were getting approvals for them, but nothing was falling out the bottom. They just weren't using them. And our pipeline was just growing. I'm like, shit, we're putting in all this work, but there's literally no revenue coming out the back of it. What do we do? And the answer was, keep putting them in the top of the pipe because eventually they'll start dropping. And that's exactly what happened because no one comes to me asking for assistance, not wanting assistance, right? You don't put your hand up and say, rescue me if you're not in trouble. You know. So I just had faith that if we carried on with our process, things would eventually come right. They always do. The sun always comes up.
Interesting. Where do you get that from? Like, how do you develop that unwavering belief in some? It probably wavers a bit, but like, where do you think that stems from? A faith either that did you start selling the process to yourself and you've seen it, so you know there's hope? Like, there's a story of a rat, and it'll come back into what we're talking about. So rats, if you chuck them in a bucket, they did the study. Chuck them in a bucket, leave them, they don't last that long. They start drowning. If you pick them out, you know, say, just before they're about to give up, they end up staying a lot longer the next time you put them in the bucket.
Right.
So do you think there's any reason as to where the faith is? Was it faith from seeing others achieve it? Was it faith that you've developed in yourself from stopping the hockey balls going into the goal? Or where do you get that faith in yourself?
I'm not sure. I don't know where that. It's sort of a resilience thing, right? I'm not sure where that comes from. I'm not sure if you can train it. Some people would probably say you can, but I think it's something inside you. And as I say, I don't know where it comes from, but maybe it's just a result of a bunch of experiences, like the rat getting pulled out of the bucket. Something's happened, often by chance, where you are the rat and you've been sort of slightly rescued and then been thrown back in the bucket. Hmm. And then you've just held on for a little longer and maybe something's rescued you again, maybe something different. Maybe there's actually been a hole in the bucket so there's less water and all of a sudden your feet are touching the bottom of the bucket maybe.
Do you ever think like, how the fuck did I pull this off? Like,
yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. I don't know where – well, I do know where my first client came from. He was a mate buying a house. He said, oh, you can do the mortgage. So that was pretty easy. But I do. I do wonder how I've managed to carry on for – 2005 is when I started in the mortgage broking world, and here we are nearly 20 years later.
What's changed from how you're approaching? Like, for example, I learned from a financial planner to manage expectations about returns. So don't sell returns because you can't control them. They're going to be fucked at some point, and they're going to come asking.
Mm.
You said this place is better for better returns. And then you manage the expectation, hey, your money's going to go down for 3 to 4 years, 30%, 40%. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now that it's happening, I'm like, hey, just like I said, and they're like, yeah, you're right. And then I'm like, well, this is why. And they keep going. So is there things that you have learned as the accumulative experience of mortgages that now you wouldn't do like you did back then? Advice to the young bucks, you know?
Yeah, totally. Gosh, are there things that I wouldn't do now that I did do back then?
Or you
I would start off being better capitalized.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that's right? My lesson too.
Right, you know, I'd have a bit more money in the bank, you know, like the old 3 months worth of expenses thing, maybe a bit more.
Maybe 3 years.
Because that helps with commission breath.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. It does. That's advice for anyone who's getting into business, actually. You know, have some capital behind you so that you can, your life can carry on so you don't have that stress. I would definitely say that. Actually, one real smart move that I made right from the outset was to approach a handful of people and ask them if they would give me their clients to talk to for mortgages, so I had a steady stream of referrals. I was in the life insurance business at that time, working for a company called ING Life, and they've transformed into OnePath and Chubb now, I think, these days.
That's a big one.
They were little back then. And so I hit up five or six life insurance guys and said, hey, will you send your customers to me? And to their credit, they all did. They all said yes, and they actually followed through on that. So that was really nice. So I would say to new people, do that. Just find some other people that you can work with and, try and send a few back to them so it's not one-way traffic. I think that's probably the answer, actually, to that other question you asked right at the start, which was, you know, how do you get your name out there? How do you get a new client in the door? That was a really smart move on my behalf. God, what else would I say to a new mortgage broker now? Oh, actually, another really good thing that I did, and this is more life insurance at the time, but it does apply to mortgages too, is I focused on the ongoing trail/renewal commission that comes out of those products. And with insurance, you can dial it up and dial it down. You can change the proportion. So rather than taking gazillions of dollars up front, you take half that and you get more on an ongoing basis. When the GFC came around, all of that renewal was oxygen. It turned out to be oxygen. And I didn't have very much because I'd only been going a couple of years. You know, I started in 2005 and the world turned to shit in 2009, right? So, you know, as a startup, it was just me. There wasn't a lot of client base and a lot of renewal commission, but what I had instead of sort of 2 to 4%, which is the basic renewal, I had more like 10 to 15, and it was oxygen to let me breathe through that really tough time. So I would say focus on that long term. It's really tempting when you see the big fat upfront commission. You go, oh, yeah, I should have that because it allows me to pay my bills. I get that. But if you just try and think a little bit further than your nose, if you like, you'll come right.
Then it's the whole game. It's like that marshmallow experiment. You heard of that one?
What's that?
So they give these kids marshmallows. You're like, if you don't eat it, we'll give you two later.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the ones that ate it later were the more successful, so they tracked them over like decades.
Yeah.
And the ones that waited for the marshmallow.
Yeah, the delayed gratification thing. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing. It's hard to do that when you've got other pressures.
Like, Well,
you've already got a mortgage or rent that you need to pay, right? Yeah. You know. So you've probably got to do a bit of both.
Yeah.
And then gradually you can work your way through to a position where you don't need to do that. But yeah. I'm glad I'm not having to start now because the compliance sort of shit you have to complete. Expensive. Oh, man, in 2005, you put up a sign, you put Campbell Hasty Mortgage Broker on it. That was that. Not exactly, but yeah.
Well, what are you compliant? As long as they're not laundering money, the bank is compliant. You know what I mean? Like, it's arguably the most compliant industry.
Yeah, it's heavily, heavily regulated. You know, there's lots of oversight and stuff. So I think that's good. I think it's good for consumers, but equally in the last few years, it's kind of just swung a bit too far. And I mean, all of our customers, or none of our customers, should I say, want to get the volume of paper that we throw back at them to say, oh, this is what you said and this is what you decided. I mean, yeah. You need to say that to people. It needs to be transparent. That's what I'm all about. But to have to give them a thick document for like a $10,000 top up on their mortgage, it's like, fuck me, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Can they afford it? Do they want it?
Yeah. Are they happy with it? Yeah. Have you made sure they're happy with it? Okay, cool. And I guess it's just about documenting all of that. I understand that, but Jesus, it's overkill, you know?
Yeah, I'm wanting to create like a video plan that has, you want to incorporate all the different learning styles, audio, visual, written. Yeah. And we used to go through the plan with them because no one does their homework. Oh, here's this plan, read it. And they're going to fucking read it. So we go through it because it's, at least in our business, it's the foundation of their resilience, understanding why.
Mm.
But anyways, you've just done a podcast. We've done 26 minutes.
Easy.
So thanks for coming on.
You're welcome, mate. Been my pleasure.